Hi, I'm Jackie.
And I'm Candace.
Welcome to WTF, Women Talk Finance, a podcast where we take a simplified approach to all things finance, including investing, a topic we believe women don't talk about enough.
We'll be speaking to women from all walks of life whose experience will help us frame some of the issues and challenges that women face every day in business.
Maybe you're starting your own company, thinking about real estate. We'll have experts on the show to talk about what you need to know.
Whether you're in your 20s or your 50s, we want to help you invest in your future, starting today. I'd like to give a quick disclosure before we begin our conversation. This overview is for informational purposes only. We might include some projections, and those should not be relied upon for the purpose of investing. Past performance is not indicative of future results, and any investments we mention are meant for accredited investors only. And any offer can only be considered upon review of a prospectus and relevant offering documentation. So please keep this in mind as we move through this overview, and remember that these are our opinions only. We are here today with Vanessa Vancor. She is a strategic consultant, a diversity, equity, and inclusion speaker, and a status quo skeptic who lives to tell inclusive stories. She is the founder of Van Courage, a bilingual strategic storytelling company for brands, organizations, and people who are deeply committed to amplifying diverse voices and doing things differently. Vanessa has dedicated her 15-plus year career to bringing diverse narratives and meaningful conversation to every newsroom, classroom, and ad agency boardroom she's been a part of. Such a cool thing. Thanks for being here with us, Vanessa. So you are a strategic storyteller. What does that mean?
So thank you for having me. Very excited to be here. For me, that means thinking critically and thoughtfully in the way that we're telling our story. And through the context of business, it's what we do, how we do it, and why we do it. And if you're doing it strategically, you're making it as easy as possible for someone else to explain what it is that you do, to articulate the value that you bring, and then how you're disseminating it is where the strategy is involved, you know, how you're reaching the people you're trying to reach in the way that you're telling your story.
Why is telling our own story so important? And I guess telling it well. I think a lot of times we try to tell our story, but do we tell it strategically?
Right. That's the problem I'm trying to solve for, because I'm also really bad at it. And so I can appreciate as a business owner how hard it is to really distill it, how to really get to the core of who we are. And also, to your point, how do you tell it in a way that it's not only authentic, but in a way that resonates with other people, right? There are going to be aspects of each of us that are going to relate to one another. We could superficially probably think of many, but there might be something in my lived experience that resonates with you deeply, and that's that moment of connection. And even though we like to think that we're rational beings that make decisions based on information, we're emotional beings, and we make decisions based on how others make us feel, or how this product or thing we're looking after makes us feel. So storytelling strategically is creating that emotional connection with someone. And it's really hard. It's hard work. It's understanding what our core values are. It's understanding what part of our entire lived experience is the most impactful and the most relevant, you know? So I think it's important because, one, knowing what parts of our stories we need to own and then knowing how to tell that also can create spaces of belonging. And I talk a lot about that with folks that I work with, is that in leadership especially, it's a way to build connection and empathy. And it also kind of gives people permission to do the same. So for me, part of my storytelling process really started in 2017 when I got to do my TEDx talk. And I always felt like I was pretty clear on my identity, but I never really told the story. And mostly because I didn't think it was good and or interesting. You know, I kind of felt like no one needs to hear this because there are lots of folks with way better stories than mine, right? Mine has no purpose or right being anywhere on stage. And I found that in really talking about my story through this lens of my identity and sort of this big lesson I learned as a kid, I still get DMs from people 5 years later, almost several times a month, who say, I watched your talk. This connects with me because my family's also from Mexico, or I speak two languages, or I don't look this and way, and people constantly make assumptions about me. And I would have never thought that that was important. So that was a big lesson for me, even as a storyteller, is that it's important to share about ourselves as much as we're comfortable to build those connections with people.
So it's funny that you say this about the TEDx talk, and you even mentioned that you're bad at telling your own story. Your skill set is really helping other people tell their story. Talk us through that exercise of almost now you're coaching yourself on how to tell your own story.
Yeah, it's funny because I think I'm not good at telling my own story, and this is what I coach other people in. And it's often easier to see it for someone else, right? And so I recently invested in a copywriter, a brand strategist to help me with my own company brand, because I see the value in having someone outside of my brain mirror to me the way that I should be communicating this. And I have started telling my clients that because I can acknowledge and really empathize with how difficult the process is. And it's hard when we live up here and we don't know how to articulate it, right? And so really it's rooted in understanding our values and understanding our why. Why are you doing what you're doing, right? Like, what is driving this project even for you? And sharing that with people is that moment of connection.
This might go to the piece you said about owning parts of your story or owning your story. Can you explain what that means?
That's a good question. I think owning all parts of our story means every bit of it. I think many of us have sort of seen this Cinderella story model, right? From rags to riches, I overcame all these things. And one of the things that I realized through my TEDx experience is that I thought the only stories that had merit were the stories that had overcome a lot of obstacle or suffering. And my own life arguably had not had that, right? My mother is the one who crossed the border. My mother is the one who went through this. I have otherwise lived a very privileged life. So what right do I have to share these pieces of me, because I had not suffered enough to earn that? And that's not true. You know, I think we all have parts that we can have pride over and that we have a right to share. And that's what I think makes that difficult, you know, is the ownership is really owning every part of us. And it may be parts that we're not proud of. I think for many of us, we could look back to former versions of ourselves and cringe a little bit, because you think, ooh, I wish I could go back and tell those people I'm a little bit more evolved. You know, I might react a little bit differently. But it's also talking about that. That might be something you've overcome and worked through. And at least through the work that I'm doing with folks, it's getting clear on that. We all have a why. What was your experience getting to this point, and what is motivating the reason for you to do this work? And how are you doing it, and how are you doing differently? There are lots of folks who are storytellers and do it beautifully, but I bring a different lens, right? And someone ultimately is going to want to work with me, because at the end of the day, we do business with people we like or with whom we can relate.
I love that, because I think you're right. I think we tend to gloss over some of the yucky parts of our story. And for me, cringe moments happen on the daily. Like, I hope you know I'm more evolved now 10 minutes later, because I recognize. But I think those moments are some of the most defining moments of us. So how can we take ownership of those? And maybe we didn't overcome anything. Maybe we laid on the floor and cried about it, you know, but those are really defining moments. I think in finance world, a lot of people love to boast about their wins. They're made up of all wins, right? And I'm like, well, I really want to know about your losses, because struggle and when you're really just knocked down, I feel like those are really the moments of growth, even if you didn't respond well, especially if you didn't respond well. How can somebody incorporate maybe some of those cringy moments and own them instead of maybe shoving them into the closet?
Mm-hmm. I remember you talking about that as an interview question when you're deciding sort of who to bring on your team. It's easy for us in those moments where we want to shine and showcase our best sides, but how we show up in those moments, even if you're in the fetal position on the floor crying, says a lot about our capacity to be human. It reveals our true character and our capacity for being vulnerable. And those traits are equally as important in a professional work setting. How are you able to hold space for other people? How are you able to show up in a way that's authentic? And I think that's an important part of us, our stories to own with compassion, right? To acknowledge these moments where maybe I'm a little bit more evolved than I was 10 minutes ago, but we are inhabiting human bodies. We are prone to error and mistakes, and that's part of the growth. But you're right. It's really easy to want to celebrate all the wins, but I think those are the moments that connect with people. Those moments you were knocked on your ass, you had nothing, you felt like you had nothing, and you had to crawl your way out. People will want to know how you did that. What gleaning piece of advice? What pulled you out of that? How were you able to accomplish that? And it doesn't have to be something really dramatic, but those are the moments we can relate to, right?
And I think as humans, storytelling is our earliest way that we passed information, right? So how do you reconcile different languages and different ways that people tell their story and use it as a bringing together rather than a moving apart? And help people create connection through stories.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think, you know, that made me think of just through the context of the way that businesses or corporations or brands tell stories. I would see this a lot in the journalism world. There's this temptation to decide in these closed meetings what we think people want to hear, right? And the way we should be approaching it is really deeply listening to people and centering stories in real experiences, right? So I would see this in the work that I was doing when I was doing bilingual journalism is this approach of sort of parachuting into communities and thinking, well, folks probably want to just hear about immigration. But when you flip the model and you bring the audience with you to give this iterative feedback on, actually, no, we really also care about education and employment and community health, you start to design stories based on what your audience or customer really wants, and you're centering it in the real lived experience of a real human. And I think that's when marketers or businesses miss the mark, is when they're creating content based on what they think they want people to hear versus really truly knowing their audience and meeting their needs. And that, again, is that's storytelling. You know, everyone needs help telling their story better. It's the sales pitch. That's a story, you know, I'm not pitching you a product because it's cool. I'm pitching you whatever I'm pitching you because it's going to solve a problem for you. And you can picture yourself with this thing or experience in your life that's going to make your life better, but you've crafted a story around the experience. Storytelling is present in everything. It's how we convey information. It's how we've preserved history. It's something we all, I think, can be inherently good at, but through a business context, it's you have to have the end user in mind, right? It's not about me. It's sharing the piece of me that maybe relates to the reason we're meeting, you know?
Well, it seems timely because there is this desire for especially businesses to be more authentic. We're seeing a lot of documentaries coming out right now highlighting the inauthenticity and in some ways really damaging pressure that storytelling with this really aggressive lens of telling the audience what they want them to hear. I mean, we saw the one about Abercrombie, the one about Victoria's Secret, there was this lack of authenticity. It was really this aggressive push about what they wanted us to think or see or feel that their brand meant, and we needed to rise to the occasion rather than the brand speaking to us on a human level. And those brands have shifted to being really authentic, wanting to speak to somebody in this human-to-human way. And I think that's really timely. Unfortunately, it took them decades and decades, and I think a lot of us are probably suffering some consequences from growing up with that inauthentic story. But I think there's like this ripple effect that storytelling has on the listener, not just on the teller.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. I mean, I think we as consumers, I think, have always been savvy. And I think part of that, too, is this tone, this arrogance that suggests that people will sort of miss it. But I think we just, thanks to social media, there's more opportunity for people to sort of call them out, right? This, there's a line there with this call out culture, but I think audiences, or rather businesses and brands, need to do a better job of assuming their audience is critical and is going to see right through it. And you're going to get called out, you know, and the ripple effect is rupturing that trust, because at the end of the day, these moments of connection are building trust with your client and with your audience. And if you're not being authentic in any case, right, it's always going to come back around. So again, if you're firm and rooted in your values and your integrity, whatever that is for you, it shouldn't be what you think you want people to think of you. It is what does it mean to really live in your integrity and show up that way in your work? And those are the people, for me at least, you know, as I'm hearing you read the bio, those, I worked really hard with my brand strategist to clearly articulate my values, because I want to attract clients with the same value system. Similarly, I want my copy to disqualify people who maybe are reading that and think, oh, I don't resonate with this. She's not the person for me. And I think the more explicit we are in the way that we tell and communicate the story, whatever form that takes, maybe an ad, copy, videos we put out of ourselves, should very clearly communicate, this is what I'm about, this is what I'm not about. And then as a consumer, you get to decide, this is for me, this isn't for me.
That's invisible ROI right there. And I think some brands are really starting to see that. A lot of brands.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, hopefully that's also the fear in like niching down, right? Because there is this fear of like, oh no, what if there's this thought where I should try to be all things for everybody. No, you know, depending on what you're doing, you should be working with like-minded people. For me, that's really important. And I think really for most businesses, even if they're not thinking about it that way, it should be, because that will create a better product, a better relationship, if you're aligning and attracting with similarly minded people.
What are some really practical tips that businesses can use to get better at telling their story, to make sure that they're clear on who their audience is and how they can be most authentic with that audience, be most impactful, reach them in the right way?
I always start with values. I'm a huge fan of Brené Brown and her research and her writing, and she has a really great book called Dare to Lead. So she started with Daring Greatly, was I think her second book, but Dare to Lead was taking all of her research around shame and vulnerability and applying it in a business and a leadership setting. So I recommend that book a lot to businesses and leaders, because it takes all of that and talks about how to apply it in a workspace. And I think that can also be true with audiences or people you're trying to reach. So I think, again, she has a really great worksheet on identifying your core values. And that's really branding. This is all branding. Storytelling and value alignment is branding. It is getting clear on the way that you're communicating what you're about and why you're doing what you're doing. And then the way that you do that too is by listening. You know, I think of so many people and organizations don't do a good job listening to truly doing the market research. There's a lot of really intelligent data online that will give you demographics on your audience, right? Gender, age range, spending habits. But who are they as human beings, right? Where do they hang out? What kinds of things are they interested in? And that takes more time, which is why I think some people skip over it. But I don't think you can be successful until you're really truly doing that. Are you really truly listening? It should be this iterative process where you invite your audience with you, where they're a part of this feedback loop constantly, where you're seeking critical feedback, you're acting on it. If you get called out, you address it. But it should be this iterative thing, because ideally you are evolving with your audience.
This is reminding me of this Domino's pizza case. Domino's was getting hit with feedback like, my pizza arrived cold, it looked terrible, whatever. Rather than Domino's kind of pushing that under the rug and working internally to be like, oh, shoot, there are some crappy pizzas out there, Domino's opened up this huge social media effort and they were like, send us pictures of your pizza. Tag the ugly ones. Like, we want to see what your pizza is looking like when it arrives. And their social media feed was like, you know, some lopsided like cheese over here, like a pepperoni over here. And they go, thank you. Thank you for all of these pictures. We can do so much better and we're going to. And they rolled out this huge campaign to be like, we're going to make these perfect, beautiful pizzas for you. And the social media, you know, like Streamline tracked their progress and tracked them listening and acknowledging we can do better and we're going to, and then showing that to their audience, which that's just as you're talking, it's such a very real life example that I'm aware of that happened recently.
Yeah. And that you might see that as a consumer and think, oh, that's so cool of them. I'm going to order from them next time. That's kind of that invisible ROI where you don't know sort of that ripple effect of people who've been with whom you've left this positive impact, you know? And I think where people get stuck is, I understand you need to run language through corporate lawyers, but the second you put it out in that tone, you lose people. I see a lot of institutions get this wrong where you just like be a human, even if you do have to have whatever legal jargon or whatever it is to protect whatever's happening, but that must have been risky for them to do. But you're owning it. Like, okay, we've got a key, you know, a quality control issue here. What do? We sell pizza. We can't afford to get this wrong, right? So in the same thing, if you're truly listening, you have to also be willing to set up these feedback loops. So for them, it was reaching out and inviting people. And we need to do the same, whether we're an individual business owner or we're working in a corporation or a business, is asking. I often ask that when I've been in settings where I've worked with leadership in a director position, to say, what feedback loops do you have in place? Oh, none. We should set some up, right? How do you set those up? How are you creating opportunities for people to give you critical feedback? You can't be successful without that.
And including that growth in your story is intimidating and scary, and it's not really the norm. And there's especially some people of you know, maybe who liked the norm, who liked how things were kind of done, might not be receptive to that either. They just might not be receptive to that side of things, that authenticity.
Well,
right?
The fear is, well, I don't want them to think I'm not credible or professional, right? There's this, we all have these different ideas of what we think success is. And the minute we admit failure, for some of us, it's, oh no, they're going to see behind the curtain and know that I'm not really good at this, or it's going to delegitimize me. And you might with some people, right? But the folks, again, for me, is I want to continue to work with people who see that and say, I appreciate that because that resonates with me. That's my dream client partner, right? Not the people that are like, well, I never make mistakes, so we can't work together.
La-ti-da.
Yeah. Boo-hoo. Yeah.
Every day you hear about people making money by investing in IPOs and startups. But what about you? These kinds of investments are simply not available to Main Street investors. At Roe Capital Group, we are committed to providing access to strategic, early-stage, primarily low-market correlated investment opportunities. Accredited investors go to rocapitalgroup.com for more information. Roe Capital Group, empowering your financial journey.
Let's dive a little bit deeper into ROI, because I'm guessing this is something that you have to overcome with corporations. They're constantly looking at their ROI, return on investment. They want to know what they're investing in this whatever. So in this case, telling their story, what is that return for them? So there is a monetary return, which is typically what companies are looking at. But there are other ways that companies can really evaluate ROI. And mm-hmm. I think this is a great example in using their story. So do you want to chat a little bit about that?
Yeah. How much time do you have?
We have, this is a 7-parter.
Perfect. yeah, this comes up a lot. And the team that I work with, we talk about this a lot because I think anyone who's worked in communications or marketing in some capacity has dealt with this, right? I think most organizations and leaders understand the output, right? They know what a video is. They know what social media is, a podcast, right? And it's really easy to focus on the output, the product, because that's fun and sexy. And I know what that looks like. A lot of the work that I do is on the front end. It's the R&D, the research and development up front that is less fun and sexy to work on because it takes a lot of mental effort to really distill what it is that you're trying to communicate. And so most people want to gloss over that and just want to jump into, well, can we just make the video? And I say, we could, right? But your story will be disjointed. There may not be a clear call to action. And our job is to make sure that people can clearly communicate to someone else what it is that you do and what you're about. But we can't do that until we invest in this work up front. And that's a tough sell because that component arguably may not have a direct revenue source, right? It's building something like this, like a podcast, that folks may engage with a piece of your content and never click through to the website. But what this is doing is building reputation. It's building credibility. It is creating a relationship with people that they may save or flag for later. That's hard to track. We can see some of those metrics digitally depending on the platform, how many times maybe it's been forwarded, has it been downloaded, but that may not directly translate into a sale or a transaction. But what is that value to you in building loyalty and building a following of folks that may or may not come through and transact in some capacity? And that's what brand building is. So depending on what you're trying to do, obviously there's a desire to position yourself as a thought leader, as a credible expert in the space. And also we'd like them to do something, right? We'd like to convert this into a client or a customer, whatever it is that you're doing. And so it's a tough sell. And to be honest, I'm at a point where if I'm having to work that hard to convince someone, they're probably not my ideal client. Some of the folks I work with will say to me, I know this is important. I don't really get it, but I trust you and I'm willing to go through the process. That's all I need. Just trust me that if we do this work up front and getting clear on who you are, how are you doing this differently? These are the questions that I ask them, right? Anyone just like me will say that they're a storyteller. But what is it that I do that is different from someone else you could hire? What perspective or lens or process am I bringing? Similarly, you should be able to communicate that. Not only who you are and what drives you, but what do you do and how do you do it differently and what value are you bringing? And when we jump to the end product without getting clear on any of those things, your story is just not, it runs the risk of not resonating, of not being clearly put together, of not answering all of the questions that people might have. So you can track things digitally with distribution and amplification. But that initial brand building that is really around building community is harder to measure.
And I think even though it's hard to measure, like direct ROI, right? Like some, here's the story, here was my client conversion. That could be very difficult to measure. But I think we can all reference storytelling gone bad, storytelling done poorly, where companies have severely missed the mark. And I think in those situations, it's real clear to see lack of ROI. So understanding that the converse can be so much more valuable to really hit the mark.
Yeah. And there's companies that we spend our money with because we love their story. Mm-hmm. I think we've used Tom's Shoes in the past. You know, it's a pretty, and I don't know what you think of Tom's Shoes story, but that's such an easy, digestible, quick, ooh, that tells me a lot about who they mm-hmm. are, that they would think buy a pair, give a pair. Like, cool. I'm on board with that.
It aligns with your values.
It aligns with me. So I think that's a storytelling done well.
Yeah. Again, someone should be able to clearly explain to someone else what you're about. And if they can't, then that is a signal that maybe your story is a little muddled and needs some work. And again, it is hard work, and I understand it's not as fun, but it's so important to invest in a branding strategist or a storytelling strategist up front, and then you're going to have amazing products.
So this is more talking at a corporate level. Do individuals, do I as a human need to have a brand and a story and a strategic story?
Mm-hmm. I know we've talked about branding for some people can feel like a dirty word, right? Because you're like, "Ugh, I'm not a brand, right? I'm not branding myself. That's gross." And I get that, because it can hold some weight or connotation for some folks, where if you want to have a private life or tend to not to shy away from the limelight, it may not feel like something that you should be doing. So if branding's not the term that resonates, it's again just finding a way to clearly communicate what you're about. And that's really what it is. And I think it's super valuable as a human being, as we show up in all of these spaces, in parenting, in a workplace setting, in any interaction we're having, where if we can continuously come back to our core values and ask ourselves, am I showing up in my integrity in this position, right? If my core value is honesty or transparency as a person, am I doing that in the work that I'm doing? And if not, where's the disconnect and how can I reconcile that? So I think I often point to that values worksheet for Brené Brown, because she gives you a vocabulary list where you go through this process and exercise of circling the ones that really resonate. And then you try to distill those to your top five, which is really hard. And we're human. So your core values and objectives right now may change in a couple of years as your life is evolving. But I think that helps me stay centered and in all the things that I'm doing. If I have to make a difficult decision, if I have to have a difficult conversation, you can come back to that as a person. And whether or not we want to brand ourselves, the truth is, anytime we're producing any content or interacting with people, they're making deductions about who we are or who we are not. And if we can own that and control the narrative, so to speak, and also show up in that way authentically, then we tell that story for them and we make it clear to them what we are about and what we're not about. And that's why, as individuals, even if you don't run a business or have this role in a corporation, it's so important to just get clear on this, so that when you are interacting with folks, you've made it easy for them to understand that.
This closes the loop a bit for me on what you said about owning parts of your story and how you, as you are conveying to other people your history, you're giving them, you know, the timeline and pulling out events that have happened. It goes to your identity. And if you present your story in a way where you're like, okay, you mentioned you didn't have a whole lot of adversity. Your mom may have, but you didn't feel your story was meaningful because you didn't have as much. But in actuality, that you talking about your story in that way allows your values to come through, meaning you value the story of someone who's had adversity and overcomes it. And yet you also value listening and looking at yourself and what you still have to offer and why your story is still meaningful. So even though your value system to me comes through as you're explaining your decision to tell your story and own parts of it.
That's spot on. That's awesome.
Let's give our listeners a couple of takeaways, because I think this was such a valuable conversation. You talked about a couple tools they can use, but this is a great practice, big or small company, and even individually. So what are some tools that people can take away from this today?
Yeah, I use a lot of what we've talked about in a variety of settings. When I was teaching at the university, I used it with my students. And I have used it in corporate settings and leadership training. It's a useful practice on an ongoing basis. So I always recommend Brené Brown, because I love her research, and she has a podcast and she has lots of great resources online. Dare to Lead is, again, a book specifically written for people in leadership or business settings. It's a great application of all of those learnings and findings. And within that as well is the values exercise. I am still learning as an adult how to name feelings and emotions and values. So when I get a list of words, it makes it a lot easier to identify the things that resonate. So I like having lists. And there's another book that I often gift to people, which is called The Desire Map by Danielle Laporte. And it's a way of designing goals, not against what you want to achieve, but how you want to feel. And it's a really interesting shift mentally on designing objectives. And one of the examples she gives is, you know, around the new year, we might hear people say, I want to lose 5 pounds. Okay, that will require you to do X, Y, and Z. But why do you want to lose 5 pounds? How are you hoping to feel when you achieve this goal? And again, while we think we are mostly rational beings, we are humans with emotion and a desire for connection. And if we think of our objectives and goals and desires through that lens, you'd be surprised at how it starts to shift for you. So I love that book and I recommend it to everyone because it's a good, kind of a good map. It's a good starting point for designing the life that you want to live based on how you hope to feel.
I'm going to check it out.
I'm adding it to my cart.
Listeners can get access to that by visiting rowcapitalgroup.com, clicking on our section notes and our blog. You can also find us on TikTok at WomenTFPodcast or email us with questions. We love to hear from you. media@rowcapitalgroup.com. Vanessa, thank you so much for this conversation and for being here with us today. Much appreciated. Where can listeners find you?
People can find me on my website. So it's vancourage.com. I'm also on the Instagram and LinkedIn, which is where I often hear from folks who DM me about the talk. So yeah, they can find what I'm about and what I do on all of those places. So thanks
and
for having me.
And we'll have you linked on everything as
well. Yeah, thank you. Yeah.
Thank you so much.
Thank you guys. This is so fun.